Section 1. Listening. This section of the test has three parts. You will hear three recordings which you will listen to twice. While listening, answer the questions in the appropriate part of the test. Follow the instructions. When answering questions in the first and second parts, use the answer sheet labelled with a cross. When answering questions in the third part, use the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now prepare the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Part 1. You will hear the first recording. For the following statements, 1 to 7, choose only one correct answer. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 1.
You will hear the best-selling author and screenwriter Linda LaPlante talking about her acting past and her extraordinary career. Linda splits her time between her homes in London and the Hamptons, New York. In 1983, she wrote the 6-part robbery series Widows for television, and in 1987, her first novel, The Legacy, became a bestseller. Linda LaPlante will tell us more about her professional path.
When I was a child, I wanted to be a ballet dancer. But the reality was that age 12 and dancing in Swan Lake, everyone else was going to the right while I was going to the left. My mother said that I showed great confidence and it was actually all other young swans that were going the wrong way. I gained a scholarship to RADA, the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. This was the opportunity for students to attract agents as well as casting directors. When the list of parts went up, I was cast as an 80-year-old nun and a 70-year-old lady. I approached the principal, but he told me that I was rather small and plain-looking and would be probably recognized as an actress in my late 40s. 2 years later, after leaving RADA, I was cast as the leading actress at Liverpool Playhouse, playing opposite Sir Anthony Hopkins in The Merchant of Venice. My first novel was The Legacy. In many ways, I approached it with the fearlessness reminding me of my own performance in Swan Lake when, as a 12-year-old ballet dancer, I was bravely dancing in my own way. I found incredible fascination in researching the plot of the novel. I was rather overenthusiastic in my early writing days and it was difficult for me to end a story. So I just continued writing and writing. The Legacy started before the First World War and went up to the present day. I remember the editor looking at me and the manuscript saying, "Dear God, Linda, most authors introduce around 20 characters, but you've got over 85. We're going to have to take out at least 200 pages. So, the outcome was that I had found my vocation as a writer. There was no particular case that inspired me to become a writer. However, I do recall reading a newspaper article about three women who had only met for the first time because their husbands were planning a big jewel robbery. Unaware of it, they were the reason the robbery squad became interested in their husbands' activities. The three women went out for lunch and drank too much wine. One of them admitted that when she was young, she had been a thief. She proved it to them by stealing a valuable emerald ring from a fashionable jewelry shop. But the three women were recorded and reported to the robbery squad, and one of the women was recognized as being a wife of a notorious criminal. Eventually, the men were arrested. There is a big difference between writing a novel and writing a script. It's crucial to have a very strong plot in both. But in a novel, you can use descriptions of characters and locations without any concern about cost. Apart from budget restrictions, scripts tend to have a good pace, which is driven by the dialogue, which is dominant and adapted to certain rules. My favorite authors are Patricia Cornwell and Michael Connelly. However, the author I most enjoy and admire is Raymond Chandler. He has an incredible ability to describe a character in two lines. His humor leaps off the page and his plots are always brilliant. He also comes up with the best titles for his books. My greatest achievement to date is that I am still capable of retaining the high standard I demand of myself. In the last few years, I have lost some very dear friends, so I'm aware of how fortunate I am to still be enjoying my life. I am, of course, extremely proud of Widows and Prime Suspect, but there are over 150 hours of other primetime television dramas that I have written and produced, of which I am equally proud.
Now listen again.
You will hear the best-selling author and screenwriter, Linda LaPlante, talking about her acting past and her extraordinary career. Linda splits her time between her homes in London and the Hamptons, New York. In 1983, she wrote the six-part robbery series Widows for television, and in 1987, her first novel, The Legacy, became a bestseller. Linda LaPlante will tell us more about her professional path.
When I was a child, I wanted to be a ballet dancer, but the reality was that age 12 and dancing in Swan Lake, everyone else was going to the right while I was going to the left. My mother said that I showed great confidence and it was actually all other young swans that were going the wrong way. I gained a scholarship to RADA, the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. This was the opportunity for students to attract agents as well as casting directors. When the list of parts went up, I was cast as an 80-year-old nun and a 70-year-old lady. I approached the principal, but he told me that I was rather small and plain-looking, and would be probably recognized as an actress in my late 40s. 2 years later, after leaving RADA, I was cast as the leading actress at Liverpool Playhouse, playing opposite Sir Anthony Hopkins in The Merchant of Venice. My first novel was The Legacy. In many ways, I approached it with the fearlessness reminding me of my own performance in Swan Lake when, as a 12-year-old ballet dancer, I was bravely dancing in my own way. I found incredible fascination in researching the plot of the novel. I was rather overenthusiastic in my early writing days, and it was difficult for me to end a story. So I just continued writing and writing. The Legacy started before the First World War and went up to the present day. I remember the editor looking at me and the manuscript saying, "Dear God, Linda, most authors introduce around 20 characters, but you've got over 85. We're going to have to take out at least 200 pages. So, the outcome was that I had found my vocation as a writer. There was no particular case that inspired me to become a writer. However, I do recall reading a newspaper article about three women who had only met for the first time because their husbands were planning a big jewel robbery. Unaware of it, they were the reason the robbery squad became interested in their husbands' activities. The three women went out for lunch and drank too much wine. One of them admitted that when she was young, she had been a thief. She proved it to them by stealing a valuable emerald ring from a fashionable jewelry shop. But the three women were recorded and reported to the robbery squad, and one of the women was recognized as being a wife of a notorious criminal. Eventually, the men were arrested. There is a big difference between writing a novel and writing a script. It's crucial to have a very strong plot in both. But in a novel, you can use descriptions of characters and locations without any concern about cost. Apart from budget restrictions, scripts tend to have a good pace, which is driven by the dialogue, which is dominant and adapted to certain rules. My favorite authors are Patricia Cornwell and Michael Connelly. However, the author I most enjoy and admire is Raymond Chandler. He has an incredible ability to describe a character in two lines. His humor leaps off the page and his plots are always brilliant. He also comes up with the best titles for his books. My greatest achievement to date is that I am still capable of retaining the high standard I demand of myself. In the last few years, I have lost some very dear friends, so I'm aware of how fortunate I am to still be enjoying my life. I am, of course, extremely proud of Widows and Prime Suspect, but there are over 150 hours of other primetime television dramas that I have written and produced, of which I am equally proud.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Part 2. You will hear the second recording. For questions 8 to 13, decide whether the statements are true, A, false, B, or whether the information was not given, C. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part two.
Hannah Beckerman was prepared to turn her life upside down and move thousands of miles to be with the man she loved. And now, Hannah will tell us more about her relationship and her life in Bangladesh.
My first date with Adam ended on a bombshell. We were getting on well over dinner, really well, when he told me his job as a diplomat meant he was about to be posted to Bangladesh for 2 years. We had only met the week before, but I knew I was beginning to fall for him. By the time Adam left for Bangladesh in September, we were deeply in love. He was one of the cleverest people I'd ever met. He had an inner calm and was affectionate and thoughtful. And so during one conversation, we came to an acceptable solution. We made a commitment to a long-distance relationship. It was challenging. Phone calls were a rarity because of the six-hour time difference, and so we sent each other long daily emails and met up whenever we could. Each time, it became harder to say goodbye after we had spent time together. In April 2009, almost a year after we met, the BBC didn't have a position for me anymore, and Adam came home for a few days. We sat in my garden, and I knew I faced a choice. Get another TV job in London and be separated from Adam for at least another year, or follow my heart. "What are you going to do?" he asked. I remember hesitating, knowing what I wanted to say, and yet fearing I might not get the answer I wanted. "I could come out to Bangladesh," I suggested. 2 months later, I'd sold my house, put my furniture in storage, and managed to find a job running a new TV show in Dhaka for the BBC World Service Trust. My family and friends were unable to hide this surprise. I was not known for being impulsive and had spent a lifetime meditating over every decision I had to make. But this decision felt easy. I wanted to be with Adam. Culture shock doesn't really begin to describe the experience of moving to a city where people with the most heartbreaking disabilities line every street begging, where you're granted a personal driver because it's not too safe to walk around, and where one day, on the journey to work, you see a group of young men beating another man over the head with a shovel. When you get to work, shaking and in tears, and tell your Bangladeshi colleagues what you've seen, they don't care and tell you that politics is the cause. Throughout all this, there was Adam. There was nowhere for us to go socially and few opportunities to make friendships, so every evening and weekend was spent alone, just the two of us. There is a unique kind of intimacy that is created when two people are isolated from their normal lives, far from home, with only each other for company. I think both Adam and I were aware how unusual it was that we never argued, never got bored with each other, that our conversation and laughter never stopped. Living abroad strengthened our relationship, made us realise that together we could do anything.
Now listen again.
Hannah Beckerman was prepared to turn her life upside down and move thousands of miles to be with the man she loved. And now Hannah will tell us more about her relationship and her life in Bangladesh.
My first date with Adam ended on a bombshell. We were getting on well over dinner, really well, when he told me his job as a diplomat meant he was about to be posted to Bangladesh for 2 years. We had only met the week before, but I knew I was beginning to fall for him. By the time Adam left for Bangladesh in September, we were deeply in love. He was one of the cleverest people I'd ever met. He had an inner calm and was affectionate and thoughtful. And so during one conversation, we came to an acceptable solution. We made a commitment to a long-distance relationship. It was challenging. Phone calls were a rarity because of the six-hour time difference, and so we sent each other long daily emails and met up whenever we could. Each time, it became harder to say goodbye after we had spent time together. In April 2009, almost a year after we met, the BBC didn't have a position for me anymore, and Adam came home for a few days. We sat in my garden, and I knew I faced a choice. Get another TV job in London and be separated from Adam for at least another year, or follow my heart. "What are you going to do?" he asked. I remember hesitating, knowing what I wanted to say, and yet fearing I might not get the answer I wanted. "I could come out to Bangladesh," I suggested. 2 months later, I'd sold my house, put my furniture in storage, and managed to find a job running a new TV show in Dhaka for the BBC World Service Trust. My family and friends were unable to hide this surprise. I was not known for being impulsive and had spent a lifetime meditating over every decision I had to make. But this decision felt easy. I wanted to be with Adam. Culture shock doesn't really begin to describe the experience of moving to a city where people with the most heartbreaking disabilities line every street begging, where you're granted a personal driver because it's not too safe to walk around, and where one day, on the journey to work, you see a group of young men beating another man over the head with a shovel. When you get to work, shaking and in tears, and tell your Bangladeshi colleagues what you've seen, they don't care and tell you that politics is the cause. Throughout all this, there was Adam. There was nowhere for us to go socially and few opportunities to make friendships, so every evening and weekend was spent alone, just the two of us. There is a unique kind of intimacy that is created when two people are isolated from their normal lives, far from home, with only each other for company. I think both Adam and I were aware how unusual it was that we never argued, never got bored with each other, that our conversation and laughter never stopped. Living abroad strengthened our relationship, made us realise that together we could do anything.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Now look at part 3. For part 3, you will need the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Please find and prepare it. Part 3. You will hear the third recording. Below, you can read summaries of the information numbered 14 to 20, which are in the wrong order. Indicate the order in which you hear the information by writing a number 1 to 6 next to the number that represents that information. Be careful, there is one extra summary. Put X next to the number that represents extra information. Write your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 3. If you are about to graduate from a high school or college, it's frightening not to know exactly what you want to do with your life. If you're stuck and don't know where to begin when it comes to picking a career, you're not alone. We're here to help. Listen to 6 great tips for choosing a career.
Tip number 1. Your work style influences your ability to become successful in certain careers. For example, if you're someone who tends to postpone things, a career where you report directly to another individual will probably be better than one where you're left on your own independent decisions for large parts of the day. Think about the jobs you've had in the past. Which ones did you excel at, and which ones did you struggle with? Were you able to work independently, or did you need to have a supervisor keeping you responsible? Tip number two. Every career requires a different skill set. Sales managers need great leadership skills, and teachers need to be able to communicate effectively with both students and parents. Take some time to figure out what you're good at. List every talent and skill you have, even if it doesn't seem like it will help you get a job. Knowing every skill that you have can help you find a career that you'll enjoy and be good at. Tip number three. What do you want out of a career? Do you want to help other people? Do you want to travel? How much money do you want to make? If you're pursuing a career that doesn't correspond with your long-term goals, it's unlikely that you'll ever feel truly satisfied with it. Of course, goals change over time, and things that were once extremely important become less so. It's still good to have an idea of what you want so that you have something to work toward. Tip number four. Of all the tips for choosing a career, thinking about what you value in a job is one of the most important. Do you love working independently, or do you need social interaction throughout the day to feel fulfilled? Is it important for you to spend time with your family and be home at a certain hour every day? Or are you fine with working overtime and having an unpredictable schedule? Really think about these questions and forget any careers that won't match up with the things you value most. Tip number five. Talking with someone who is already working in the field you're considering can be extremely helpful. If you can meet a variety of people, that's even better. A 15-minute dialogue can tell you a lot about a specific career. Ask questions about the pros and cons of the job, whether or not the person would choose it if they could go back in time, and what kind of skills they've found to be most beneficial. Job shadowing can also be beneficial. Following someone around for a day is kind of like getting a picture of your future. Tip number six. If you're currently in college, you probably have access to a career counselor who can help you decide what career would be best for you. This counselor can give you tips for choosing a career, help you apply for internships, and put you in contact with someone to interview or shadow. There are also lots of options online that can help you narrow down your choices. For example, blogs provide tons of information for college students who are trying to choose a career.
Now listen again. If you are about to graduate from a high school or college, it's frightening not to know exactly what you want to do with your life. If you're stuck and don't know where to begin when it comes to picking a career, you're not alone. We're here to help. Listen to six great tips for choosing a career.
Tip number one. Your work style influences your ability to become successful in certain careers. For example, if you're someone who tends to postpone things, a career where you report directly to another individual will probably be better than one where you're left on your own independent decisions for large parts of the day. Think about the jobs you've had in the past. Which ones did you excel at, and which ones did you struggle with? Were you able to work independently, or did you need to have a supervisor keeping you responsible? Tip number two. Every career requires a different skill set. Sales managers need great leadership skills, and teachers need to be able to communicate effectively with both students and parents. Take some time to figure out what you're good at. List every talent and skill you have, even if it doesn't seem like it will help you get a job. Knowing every skill that you have can help you find a career that you'll enjoy and be good at. Tip number 3. What do you want out of a career? Do you want to help other people? Do you want to travel? How much money do you want to make? If you're pursuing a career that doesn't correspond with your long-term goals, it's unlikely that you'll ever feel truly satisfied with it. Of course, goals change over time, and things that were once extremely important become less so. It's still good to have an idea of what you want so that you have something to work toward. Tip number 4. Of all the tips for choosing a career, thinking about what you value in a job is one of the most important. Do you love working independently, or do you need social interaction throughout the day to feel fulfilled? Is it important for you to spend time with your family and be home at a certain hour every day? Or are you fine with working overtime and having an unpredictable schedule? Really think about these questions and forget any careers that won't match up with the things you value most. Tip number 5. Talking with someone who is already working in the field you're considering can be extremely helpful. If you can meet a variety of people, that's even better. A 15-minute dialogue can tell you a lot about a specific career. Ask questions about the pros and cons of the job, whether or not the person would choose it if they could go back in time, and what kind of skills they've found to be most beneficial. Job shadowing can also be beneficial. Following someone around for a day is kind of like getting a picture of your future. Tip number 6. If you're currently in college, you probably have access to a career counselor who can help you decide what career would be best for you. This counselor can give you tips for choosing a career, help you apply for internships, and put you in contact with someone to interview or shadow. There are also lots of options online that can help you narrow down your choices. For example, blogs provide tons of information for college students who are trying to choose a career.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. The listening section is now over. Please stop working on this section. Now go on to the next sections of the test.